mentioned or
So if I do believe that there will be a couple of members that wish to declare interests. I know that Councillor Popley has been in touch already, and if so we may as well just go through the declarations, because there will be bodies that you sit on that you feel that you should be declaring an interest for. So
I'll start with Councillor Bolton.
Oh, both. Popley is the first.
Is it Popley? Councillor Popley, please.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'm a member of Sheffield Town Council who are listed as a consulting team under one of the appendices, but I come to the meeting with an open mind. Thank you.
Any others?
Any others?
You have to press the button and then I'll record it. Yeah.
I'm out of practice. Clearly, as councillor for Shuffle Ward, I do have an interest in that specific area, and I'm also a member of the two residents groups within the ward who will be putting in their own submissions. But like councillor Popley, I'm here with an open mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor
Parton. Good evening. Member of Leicestershire County Council.
Councillor Brooks. Have you got an open mind there tonight?
All night.
Good.
Thank you, Jane. Yes, I'm a member of the Parish Council. I come with an open mind.
Councillor
Thank you, Chair. I'm a member of the Barrow and Saw Parish Council and the Vice Chair of the Parish Council of Commonwealth.
Thank you. I'm the Parish Councillor Paul Thurmaston, and I've also come with an open mind this morning today.
And I can confirm the sound recording is now back on again. It's working.
Okay. And are we all right not to start from the beginning?
Yeah, it's all right. We'll just keep going.
Okay. Thank you very much. Right, declarations of party whip. There's been no declarations made. Questions on the bridging procedure going on at 16. There are no questions that have been submitted. We're going on to item 6, cabinet items for pre-approved decision scrutiny. The following items have been identified for pre-decision scrutiny from the cabinet agenda for the 10th of the June 2021. So, item 6A, pre-submission Charnwood Local Plan 2021 to 2037. I would like to ask Councillor Bailey to introduce this report.
Thank you, Chair. Wait for the mics to reboot. Thank you very much for inviting us here this evening. As you can see from your papers, it is a very detailed and very lengthy report that has taken many years to get to this point. It is a statutory requirement that we have an up-to-date plan, and the publication of the new plan is one of the most significant pieces of work that the council do at any one time. The plan sets out the borough's vision up to 2037, and it plans for around 9,000 new homes, in addition to those already that have been granted planning permission. It sets out the allocations of land as well that the council put forward, and those have been based on evidence and have also gone through a substantial amount of appraisal to get to this point as well. Once adopted, it will ensure the council has an up-to-date policy framework and provide a 5-year supply for the decision-making of planning applications. If approved by Cabinet, later on this week, on the 10th of June, and then on to full council on the 21st of June, it will then go to a 6-week public consultation starting in July.
Thank you very much. Now, we have scrutiny has looked at this in the past, and in November 19 and also February of this year. And I would like to ask now Claire Clark to first of all introduce the item as in the February scrutiny and how that has informed the consultation going forward now. Thank you very much, Claire.
Thank you very much. So, as Cassie has just mentioned, we consulted on the draft local plan in 2019, and we came to see scrutiny in the February that followed. And the scrutiny meeting really focused on the effectiveness of the consultation that we'd just undertaken, the key themes that had come out through that consultation in terms of representations, and what we were going to do next in terms of responding to those reps. At the time, we explained that we'd had good response to the consultation and received over 430 responses with over 3,000 comments included. We'd had a number of events and we felt we'd had a very successful consultation. In terms of the key themes that had come out from the consultation, we had highlighted a number of aspects. The discussion at the meeting really focused on infrastructure and the lack of consideration of infrastructure in the draft local plan, and also around the need for us to be more ambitious potentially on climate change, design, transport, and health in particular. We then talked about what we were going to do next, and that's really where the story sort of carries on, I suppose, from following on from that meeting. We individually read all of the responses that we received and responded to each of the comments. So prepared over 3,000 responses back to those individual comments that we'd received. Often we were just saying that we were noting the comments or that we would go away and do more investigation. But what that created was an extraordinarily long list of actions for us to go away and think about as a team. So the actions that led from it were things around the need for new evidence, for us to revisit evidence that we had already prepared, for us to consider a whole lot of new information that had been submitted to us, particularly around new sites, and to work with infrastructure providers, and that was a key piece of work that we've done since the last consultation. And then there was the job of refining the wording themselves and the policies and thinking about those. So since we last came to scrutiny, we've published a statement of consultation in the March. We've undertaken a number of new evidence-based studies, some transport evidence, evidence on air quality, sustainable transport, flood risk assessments. We've done a number of addendums to studies that had already been done, and a housing needs assessment. And all of that, and viability evidence. All of that has also been backed up with a significant amount of engagement with a range of bodies, but in particular we've had a lot of meetings since the last consultation with colleagues at the County Council around education and transport, and with the CCG on health. All of that has informed the process we went through next, which was with a very much an open mind to finding something different from the first time around in terms of preparing the draft plan. We looked again at the key questions that we'd asked ourselves in preparing that plan, whether the scale of development that we were planning was correct, whether the distribution was right for Charwood, and whether the sites individually that we'd selected were the right ones. So there's been a number of changes that have flowed from that process, very much informed by the scrutiny process that we went through last time and the consultation responses that we received. And just to give you a flavour of some of the changes, the overall structure of the document has changed quite significantly. We've introduced a more of a focus on places. So there's place-based policies at the front of the document after the vision and the development strategy, which thinks about each of the key places in Charford. Apologies, I can't turn my head very well without losing the microphone. Apologies, I'm not talking directly to you. So yes, we've changed that structure to look at places. We're looking at Loughborough and Shepshire, the service centres, our other settlements and our countryside. And we've developed a range of policy responses to those individual areas so that you understand the areas as a whole and you've got all of the key issues for that particular place in front of you when you're thinking about planning application in that area. The other key change that we've made is to create a climate change chapter, which we didn't have in the first document, and that was really to give it more prominence in the document and respond to a very big response that we had with the consultation of people who were interested and they wanted to know what the plan was doing on that front. The overall scale of housing has changed. It's actually gone down from the scale of development we were looking at overall in 2019, and that's primarily because we've lost a year of the plan. And so although we're 2 years on, we've pushed the plan on a year to 2037, and we've brought it right up to date, so it's based in 2021. So we've gone from looking at 17 years to looking at 16. The number of homes that we've got to identify over and above what we had, we've already got in the planning permissions has gone up. We were looking at around just over 7,000 homes, and we're now looking at just under 9,000. The sites that we have selected, the reason for that change is really around the issue of our local housing need figure has actually gone up. The Chalmers, again, it's the last time we spoke to you, so it's now 1,111. And we have very strong feedback through the consultation that we haven't built any flexibility into the plan. So we've looked at a scale of flexibility that's there really to make sure we deliver that 1,111 over the plan period. So things will change, sites won't come forward as we hope, and so there is that extra bit of flexibility built in. In terms of the sites that we've selected, we've seen 17 sites taken out of the plan from the draft plan to this version, and that's been related to some sites getting planning permissions that have become commitments. Some sites we found that there wasn't a willing landowner, and so that's not a deliverable site from our point of view. And in some cases, we found there's new evidence that suggested that we've got better sites to be focusing on. And then we've introduced 18 new sites, and they are a combination of brand new sites that we weren't aware of in 2019 and sites where we've got new evidence that suggested we need to do something different. And a big part of what has changed has been the feedback we've had from infrastructure providers and the need really for us to create a critical mass in some communities to deliver new schools. So that's been a big factor in the distribution of sites. In terms of looking to be more ambitious, that's definitely influenced the way we finalise the plan. We've looked to be clearer on some of our design policies and let them be a very big focus, landscape and design in particular, on policies that come up for individual sites. So we've been reasonably prescriptive on some of our sites to say what we want to see those developments coming forward like, in terms of where the development will be focused, where the landscaping will be focused, and the need for that to be set out in policy has been driven by that ambition to achieve the right thing for Charlemagne, really. We've also gone for a 10% biodiversity net gain policy, which wasn't in the previous plan. And as I say, landscape has certainly been a key factor in how we finalise the plan. And then lastly, really just to mention, there's been an awful lot of refinement of the policy set. There's 50 policies in the plan, and the most of what was in the draft plan has made its way into the final plan, although there has been a switching around of emphasis. So for instance, we've created a car charging policy that's individual rather than being lost in a policy on sustainable transport more generally. So some of that sort of movement of policy to give them prominence or to clarify exactly what we're looking for. So I hope that's a helpful summary of how we've moved from February to today.
Thank you very much, Claire. I think that makes a good response from how we've moved on from scrutiny. I'd just like you, if you could, just to explain the flexibility that we've done with the critical mass, and probably using Amsterdam as an example here. Thank you.
Yes, certainly. So we have feedback through the consultation from a number of bodies that we created. So we've got a housing number that we need to meet. And so to meet the housing number in total, we need to be planning for just 17,776 homes. Now, if we plan for exactly that right number of homes with exactly the right number of sites, and anything fails, we won't meet our housing target. We won't maintain our 5-year supply. So you plan for more than that to create that flexibility in your plan. We planned for about 7% in the draft plan, and there was a real feeling that wasn't sufficient for a number of reasons from participants, from people making references. And so we took some advice from the Planning Inspectorate, and we looked at the government guidance, and there's a lot of description of 10% being a useful benchmark for flexibility in different areas of policy. So that's what we've gone for. We've gone for a 10% flexibility. So that's increased the overall number of homes that we're looking for. In terms of critical mass, we have worked really closely with Education at the County Council. Their representation on the draft plan raised really significant concerns about how service centres would cope with the incremental growth that was being proposed in quite a number of service centres in terms of school provision. And so we worked with them to suggest, you know, look at different options for how we could move forward. We looked at what you would need to create the critical mass for our new primary school, and we looked at also whether there was opportunity to extend the existing schools. But there is a really critical issue in our service centres, not all of them, but in quite a number of them, where the schools are already quite large, or they're at capacity for the site that they sit within, so there's no way of growing them. So we quickly started to move to look into new schools and what would be needed. So the critical mass in terms of the number of homes for a new school is 700 homes. That creates the pupil yield to make a new school possible. And that's a one form entry school, which is the smallest school that the County Council likes to see come forward and is likely to be supported by those that run schools. We then looked at all of the service centres in terms of which ones have potentially the land to create that critical mass, so the number of homes that could genuinely be delivered because we have the land available, and also which villages had the most need in terms of getting to that sort of critical point. By far the worst village in terms of lack of capacity is Barrow-upon-Soar, where the school is at maximum size, I think towards the end of this year when they do their final expansion to 620 pupils. That's the largest size school that the County Council like to see. And the site itself in Barrow is couldn't see an extension even if we were to agree with them that was a sensible way forward. So we've been looking at the sites that were available and looking for an opportunity for a new school there. And then in terms of Anstey, which is the other location we've gone for a new school, really that was about the land being available and the opportunity there for us to create that critical mass. So Anstey's gone from a fairly modest scale of development in the draft local plan to nearly 700, which is to achieve that critical mass. So it's quite a big significant change for those two villages in particular, and the counter to that has been that we've seen less development being proposed in some of our other service centres where, you know, in order to create that critical mass in those two villages.
Thank you very much. Richard, would you like to add anything?
Richard, would you like to add anything to that? Mainly regarding the 5-year supply issues and probably unmet need.
Thank you, Chair. So we don't have a 5-year supply at the moment, as we recently announced for members. During this period of time, that means that all applications that come through to us have to be considered in light of the advice in the MPPF and paragraph 11, the presumption in favour of sustainable development. So it's really important that we get our plan in place as quickly as possible to bring us back the 5-year supply situation. So, we're not operating or planning in a vacuum. There is the wider situation around the Leicester and Leicestershire area, and the cities are planning their own plan at the moment and have indeed been subject to an uplift in their housing numbers as a consequence of the government standard method for housing calculation. So we will have to consider as a wider housing market area how anyone that needs to arise from the city over and above what we're conjuring with at the moment, how they can be accommodated. But that is really an issue for us down the line. We do hope to be able to reach a sense of common ground with them on that later. I think it's February.
slightly different from the scrutiny that was done in November and February. They informed this scrutiny, and its role of going out on consultation. So hopefully every I has been dotted and every T has been crossed, and that is why we are scrutinising it at the moment, to make sure that it's fit to go out for public scrutiny. Right, I would like to, unless Richard, maybe you'd like to say anything else. I'd like to open it up for questions, please. Right, are you keeping a... So it's Councillor Copley, please.
Thank you, Chair. I have numerous thoughts running through my head when I was reading this, but one in particular is regarding the biodiversity section. I refer members to page 196 of tonight's paper onwards, and it talks about a 10% biodiversity gain. Whilst an ample aim, how are the council going to ensure that we meet a 10% net gain of biodiversity on every single application coming forward, given the fact that in some instances it does say that there will be exceptional circumstances where this won't be, well, it doesn't appear to be a necessity. I refer members to page 199. It does say it must be demonstrated that there is no alternative site available and there are no, or there are clear, convincing public benefits to the development that significantly outweigh the nature conservation or scientific interest of the site. Now, for me, if we're going to hit 10% biodiversity gain on every single site, well, that's our aim, especially when at the council, we have made a commitment as members to hit a target carbon neutral for the next few years. Surely that should be non-negotiable. Thank you.
Claire.
Thank you. Yeah, so
I'm
it's a good question. So the 10% biodiversity net gain is quite a step change actually from where we are at the moment with the core strategy. So the core strategy looks for no net loss, so we're looking for that through our planning application. The draft plan as well, we carried on with that that proposal. We had an eye on the fact that the Environment Bill was coming along, and that's going to be introducing a mandatory 10% net gain on all sites across the country. And we felt that, you know, possibly that's not too far away, and we could wait for that in terms of the way we move forward as an authority. I think the in part the consultation response is asking us to be a bit more ambitious about what we're looking for in Charnwood, in part that the Environment Bill's been put back and it's now some time off. I think it's led to us having to think about whether it's something we could achieve now and could do. Now, we're really lucky as an authority, we've got a senior ecologist who works for the authority, and not all borough councils have that. So I think we feel we've got the expertise in house to bring the policy in ahead of the country and be more positive from that point of view. Now, it's a good point, we won't achieve it on every site. So, you know, there will always be those exceptions where it's not not the right thing to do for a particular site. But we should be able to achieve a contribution instead, or really a compensation instead, to achieve it somewhere else. So whilst we might not always achieve it on site, we should always achieve the 10% net gain overall for the borough. It's just maybe that we deliver that off-site in another location. And we're working on a biodiversity strategy as an authority, which is something we'll bring to Cabinet in due course, which will provide a basis in a sort of a document that will advise people on what we're going to do with that money if it's collected in terms of spending it in borough and what our priorities are. So I think we're in a good place to push ahead and do this ahead of the rest of the country, and we think we've got good evidence to demonstrate that we can deliver it.
Councillor Bolton, obviously if you'd like to come back on questions, please do so. Councillor Bolton.
Thank you, Chair. I have no desire at all to be parochial in what I'm about to ask, but a big concern that picks up on what you were just talking about before Councillor Pocky asked his question was to do with schools and education. I have a huge concern about a lack of schools. cases. Not only do I have a concern about the school cases, I have a concern about other infrastructure elements, such as GP surgeries. In my ward, we have one GP surgery whose list has been closed for a very long time. And there are a significant number of proposed properties to be built in that area. So I'm concerned about schools because the schools are full to overflowing at the moment. I'm very concerned about GP and dental services and other elements of infrastructure, including public transport and that type of thing. So what assurance can you give me, or what comfort perhaps can you give me, that these concerns are actually fully addressed in the draft plan? Thank you.
Thank you, Beth.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that in preparing the draft plan, we struggled to get really good engagement with infrastructure providers because we were stuck in a place where until we could say where the growth was going to go, they couldn't tell us what the infrastructure requirements would be. And we were trying to say, well, where are the infrastructure capacities so we can plan the development where there is capacity in the system? I think when we get to the bottom of that difficult sort of conversation we're having, there isn't an awful lot of capacity in the system when it comes to primary schools and GP surgeries. And so wherever you put the growth, we are going to need to think about that infrastructure to support that that development. Having set out the draft plan in 2019, the engagement really had a real step change, and we really got excellent engagement from the county education colleagues and from the CCG. And the CCG have been restructuring, and we've found that really helpful for us as planners. They've been much more accessible, and we've been able to have some really good conversations with them about their estate and their estate plan. So the CCGs at the moment are going through an estate review, and they're looking at three different things, and one of those things is where housing growth is going to be. And so we've been feeding directly into that process to explain where we think the growth will be directed in very high-level terms, and that's informed the work that they're doing, which is really helpful. They identified a real concern around Shepshed in there. Consultation response back to us in 2019, and we've been working with them on Shepshed, including they've had conversations with both surgeries now to understand the constraints of their two surgeries. And actually, often what you find with doctor surgeries is there's rooms within buildings that can be converted into clinical rooms, and so it could increase their capacity without necessarily needing to extend the building even. So it's really getting into that level of nitty-gritty with the surgeries to understand what they've got to offer, what we could do to bring more rooms into use, whether there is a need to do an extension, and then possibly whether there's a need for a satellite surgery. The CCG's business model is very much to consolidate their existing surgeries rather than look for new. So we'll work with them on that and try and make sure we've got the right provision in place for the homes. And then on the education front, we have been looking at a number of new schools. We've talked about ones in the service centres, but we're also looking at new schools at Loughborough and at Shepshed and at Syston. And that's located with the most significant and largest growth in the borough. And they're all much bigger schools. We're looking at 2 form and 3 form entry schools to pick up the number of children that will be created by the larger scale developments. There is some capacity within schools in Loughborough, but it's nothing compared to the amount that we're going to be creating through this development. So I suppose the assurance comes that we've got really good working relationships with the infrastructure providers that we've built up over the last 18 months. And I've learned an awful lot about the infrastructure that we've got in the borough and where there is opportunities with colleagues. And so I think we've got a really good understanding, and that's really informed the approach that we've taken. And then on the transport side of things, we're working really closely with Leicestershire County Council, Highways England and Leicester City Council. Done lots of transport modelling with them, and we've been meeting again even today to talk about what we do next and what further evidence is needed to make sure we've got everything in place to support this plan.
Thank you. Richard.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. just to add to what Claire said, she's set out very comprehensive. review of how we've approached the identification of sites and working with stakeholders and what have you. But I think it's important thing to say is that the planning system it can't actually deal with existing problems. So where there are existing shortfalls in infrastructure, it can't directly address those with new development. What we can do is work creatively with stakeholders, CCG, County Council, etc., to try and identify sites which, through their impact in communities and the addressing those impacts through a new school's provision or surgeries or what have you, actually helps to overcome some of the existing problems as well. It's a sort of an added bonus, but what we can't do is deal with on its own the existing problems that there are in communities.
Thank you. Thank you. Councillor Hoff.
There will be several short questions, so as I get some clarification, if that's all right. Thank you. Now, it's understood that this is extremely detailed, and that it's now 2 to 3 years of work in the making, as demonstrated by the sheer size of the document. So it's understood that there's a huge amount of detail gone into it. But will this document, as we read it here, these four parts, is this what is being presented to the public and stakeholders for them to pore over?
So, in terms of the word yes, so if it's approved by Cabinet and by full council, then yes, this is the document that will go out for presentation. But I should emphasise that it's not been presented to that audience yet, so there'll be photos and diagrams, and I just want to cover all of that sort of element added to it. So it'll be much more like the document we had in the draft local plan.
Because the reason I ask is when I'll use two examples, and they are health and education. Now, the education, there's some detail and explanation starting at 984 and finishing at 987. Now, that's obviously there's more. Specific, well, there's some small mentions in each of the parts of Charnwood. But for something as critical to people as that, what can we do or what can be done to bulk that out and to put more detail for the public to look at? Because the reason I ask is that when we look at this, we're looking at this through a continual eye. We're having regular briefings with you. We had meetings going way back, before the pandemic, and you've been working through this since, and we're having more meetings now. But for the general public that look at this, they might look at that and see, is that all I have to go on? And of course, then there'll be personal experience of people that are really struggling to find school places now. And then, of course, they're seeing applications for housing now, especially if we've got the 5-year housing supply. So, in terms of presentation and information, what else can we provide? Because there is a phrase, yes is nothing without how. And when you look at the diagrams of all the areas where there's land earmarked, would it be helpful if we were to indicate this is where we could put a school, this is where the CCG has suggested a new surgery could be provided, these are the roads we're looking to actually improve, to give give people more confidence that the, what they're seeing is actually a whole plan to address all the minutiae of issues that, that everybody experiences. Because I'll give you one example before I finish, and that's I was talking to the schools, the school provision manager at County Hall, and it was probably you, the same person you spoke to. And you know, I was talking to him about a development that was got that had applied for outline permission in the south of Loughborough. And when I read the thing that came to me from on my county email, it said that it would immediately push the school provision into a deficit of about 34. And so I thought, well, okay, then what do we do in that scenario then? So I asked him, in that scenario, what would happen? And he went through the local schools. Some were on floodplains, some had no capacity, some would have issues with Sport England. And straight away, I thought, okay, and this goes back to the point of, you know, we've got the luxury of this detail, but for the members of the public that perhaps are experiencing these problems, and then they see this plan with the amount of houses, the headline figure, and they'll think, but there's problems already. So how can we present it full circle so that it gives reassurance that there's a plan here for a school, there's a plan here for a road, it goes far beyond four pages of saying we have done some work on it. I know you've done lots of work on it, but did a problem.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you. So there's a couple of sides to that, really, I think. The first is to say that in terms of accessing the document, what we did with the draft plan, which was very successful, and we're looking to repeat this time around, and we've already started this process because it's gone into the public domain as part of the cabinet paper, so people are already starting to have a look for it on our website. So we've added on a frequently asked questions page that deals with some of the questions you just described, and I'll have a look at those tomorrow and see how well we've dealt with the infrastructure questions and whether there's more we can do on that front. We'll also provide a summary document which will give people a flavour of the whole thing and some of the key messages that I've been able to give you tonight. During the actual consultation, we'll hold a couple of presentations which people can come and hear about the plan as a whole and get a flavour for how it works. And we've already had one parish council event and one member event, and we plan to have more of those. We've been meeting with individual parish councils where that's appropriate, particularly when there's a lot of change, to really delve into some of these issues. I completely agree, it's a big document with lots of information. In terms of the issues around infrastructure, I think you're pointing to the infrastructure schedule, which is the sort of table with lots of information in it, and it goes into each area. There's a lot of information there, and I think what I would point to is in terms of how you can use the document. So the policies map has each of the allocations labelled on it with a policy number. You can then go into the document and read what we've said about that particular allocation. And where there is a relationship between that allocation and a new school, we've stated that as part of the policy. So, for instance, to the south of Loughborough, I'm not sure off the top of my head what the policy reference is, that'll be on the map. And then you can cross-refer into the document, see the policy on that particular allocation, and find out about the school and what other sites will be contributing to that new school. We haven't got that same level of detail with health because, as I say, their model is not to look for new surgeries. At the moment, we haven't identified any. And at the moment, I think it's fair to say that the information around highway proposals is still being refined and improved. And so I think to set it out in the plan at this stage might lock too many things in, where actually we want that flexibility to work with all of the different bodies to come up with the best solution for Loughborough, for Charlton, sorry. So I think there's a combination of effects there. I think the other thing you've mentioned is that we've got planning applications arriving now and communities that are looking at that and wanting to understand how that works with this plan. And again, that's something we'll have a look at on the frequently asked questions. But what we're doing with the County Council highways, it's saying where we've got planning applications arriving now, we need to have an eye on the plan and what's coming along as part of the bigger picture. And so, for instance, a development to the south of Loughborough, we would be looking for those agencies to be highlighting the wider growth that's coming and thinking about the cumulative impacts of those as part of dealing with the planning application. So that's really working with our development management colleagues and our development management colleagues at Education, Transport and CCG to make sure that we're all coordinated and understanding each other and making sure we're planning for that long-term future.
And one final question for now is going back to that, yes, it's nothing without an explanation and information that's provided that gives reassurance that it will be fulfilled. Certain areas have had developments, and then the 106 agreements have then followed. To what extent can we bring forth the infrastructure, the schools, the extra places at surgeries, even before that development is well underway, so that they coincide with completion rather than complete then school?
Thank you, Claire.
So yeah, it's a really interesting element of planning for Section 106 is so our education colleagues will tell us that if they provide the school too early, you'll draw children in from the surrounding area to the new school because it will have people be interested in that to you and it might offer something extra. So you can end up drawing children in from the wider area and then the development comes along, there's no spaces left at the school that you plan for that development. So it's a really fine balance between waiting for enough children to be on the development to make that school work and for it to serve the people it's intended to serve. There's also the issue of viability and making sure that we don't load developments too much at the beginning that they become viable. So the developers need to be making some sales and getting the cash flow going on their sites in order to make all the contributions that we take from them. So there's an element of that feeds in as well. So it's something we look with all of our infrastructure providers to try and get the right balance. It's a fair question. It's something we do have to think about in terms of our housing trajectory and getting that right.
Thank you. And as Claire said, it is a fine balance, especially with the schools, and it's my main fear on the Sue in Thurmaston, that the schools there will draw in people from the city because it is on the edge, and when the development is developed, there will be no places left. So you'll have this. Stupid situation where people from the new development have to go to the old because that school is limited now. So this is critical, and opening up probably one former school and then having the space to develop at a later date. Just one question. You've spoke about the critical mass, and I think that's probably what Councillor Parton was inferring might be of interest to the public if that was put down. Is there any way that can be explained that, you need 700 places, you need 700 homes before it kickstarts this? So will that sort of thing go in as information? Thank you.
Yeah, certainly can do, and I'll go and have a look. I would imagine we've dealt with it in high-level terms as part of the summary. I can't recall because I read it so long ago now, but I will go and check, and we'll make sure that issue is dealt with through the frequently asked questions as well.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of initial points. I reserve the right to be wrong here because it's going to be a housekeeping comment. In the document, in several places, when you're talking about travellers and travelling show people, you refer to policy H8, and I think it should be policy H9. In our document, it's in pages 95, 101, 119, 403. know, you clearly recognise that's an important aspect, as, you know, to support the vitality and viability of our towns and villages, and there's a need to work with local communities, county council, businesses, developers and so on. Now, part of your policy in doing that is to engage with or encourage parish and town councils to address car parking needs, identify potential sites for new car parks through the neighbourhood, through the neighbourhood planning process, because they've got that detailed street by street understanding. The major urban settlement in Charlwood is Loughborough. Loughborough does not have a town council and therefore doesn't create a neighbourhood planning process. And it has a Loughborough committee, but the remit is different from that. So what's the mechanism for that sort of engagement for Loughborough that the parish and the town council can be there to? How can Loughborough and their representatives feed into that process?
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Chair. I'm glad our signalling system
appears. Oh, sorry, I did.
Working well between Claire and I. I'm just conscious that Claire's done a lot of talking, and just give her a break. But the answer is that Loughborough can have a neighbourhood plan if it wants to establish a neighbourhood forum. It can formally constitute that, and it can prepare a neighbourhood plan. So it doesn't stop Loughborough from going through this exercise, and we'd be very happy to talk to representatives of Loughborough who are interested in doing that and advise them how they can go about it. And you'll probably find actually that government is keen to support neighbourhood plans in areas that don't have parishes or town councils as well, so there may be some grease that can be applied to the wheels to help finance this.
Councillor Popley.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for all the responses you've given so far, all of you. My further question is a bit of a summation point, really. Based on what I've heard today so far from everyone else, and when I was reading these papers, I understand Rob pursuing option two, is that correct? Is that the, or potentially with the plan as it is? But I look at option four as a proportion distribution, and hearing the strain on the thing, you know, the services that are in place so far, you know, doctors, surgeries, and, you know, education and things like this. I wonder if officers or the lead member could expand why, even though in certain points of the report it says it shouldn't be pursued because there's no positive effect, but in other parts of the report it says there's a minor positive effect. How can a model have both a positive minor effect and then not be pursued? It just seems to be contradictory to me. So, I just want some elaboration on that point. But I'm just thinking, with a blank canvas potentially across other parts of the borough that haven't yet been tapped into economically yet, you could build new schools, you could build new doctor surgeries, you could serve them to areas that aren't yet serviced by these things. And therefore, I'm just thinking aloud here. I know I've come to the screening commission new and late in the day compared to where other members have in the room, but it just seems, why are we rehashing an old idea that hasn't yet met the 5-year supply thus far? Why are we so sure that this current plan, that is an expansion of what's gone before, in all essence, is going to be the thing that unlocks the golden nugget instead of another option which hasn't been utilised yet, which could actually do more good long term? Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. Richard.
Thank you. So the document that you're referring to is a sustainability appraisal, and that looks at a range of options, and that's a really important part of the plan making process. And it was definitely the emphasis of the document that we consulted on in 2019, where we looked at all the options and we'd chosen our preferred option, and we were consulting on whether that was right or not, or whether we should have done something different. This time around, we've listened to the consultation responses, which for the most part agreed that the overall pattern of growth that we were identifying was a sensible one, and so we've built policies to sort of to be led from that, really. But going back to that process of options appraisal, we looked at a number of options. and we did the sustainability appraisal process, basically looks at the positives and negatives of those different options across, I think it's 14 criteria. So it's, that's where you can get some positives, some negatives, because even within the same category. So the categories deal with all sorts of issues, from access to services, landscape, biodiversity, flood risk, and all the different categories that you'd expect a sustainability appraisal process to look at. Now, it might be that one strategy, which is for, say, urban concentration, might have the positive impact within one of those categories. I'm trying to think of a good example here, of where, okay, so you're going to have good access to services and facilities for the most part because you're close to the city or close to the urban areas, because that's been the focus of this strategy. But you may also find that developments are very far out of those centres, so on the edge of Leicester, you're going to be much further from the centre than you are from the edge of, say, a village. Did you want to come in?
Yeah, I'll take your page.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Claire. Just when I was reading this again, there was a line that stuck in my mind, and it said something about, I think it was the Coates and Six Hills area. It wasn't sure it could be serviced to Melton or words to that effect. Now, I know this area relatively well, because I visit Rutland every single year, and I have to drive through this spot to get to Rutland. You're only 20 minutes away, that. It's like another prime location. There's another report in the press recently that's referred to a land the other side of Belton. I know it's a different authority, but if we're using that as blank canvas again, you're servicing Ashby, you're servicing Colville. I just can't quite see how not possibly pursuing a blank canvas idea hasn't got some merit, because I know what we're saying, that this proposed plan could meet the need. However, to date, the existing plan, which is quite similar, hasn't done so, and therefore I just don't know why we are potentially exploring other options to go with a more distribution approach. Thank you.
Oh, I keep switching you off. Hang on.
Brilliant, okay, thank you. I'm really grateful that you interrupted me, because I think perhaps talking with cross purposes. So the idea of a new settlement was one of the options. A new settlement at the time wasn't, we had Coates and we subsequently had Six Hills, and they would need to be combined with other sites because they wouldn't be sufficient to meet our housing need on their own. Now they were assessed against the more concentrated growth and more dispersed growth, and they came out as the least positive option of the four that we were looking at. And actually, interestingly, one of the key issues is around deliverability. So large sites like that, strategic sites, take time to deliver, as we found in Charlwood through our own experience with sustainable urban extensions. Starting afresh with no infrastructure in place in these locations would require further work to get that site going. And there aren't those relationships with the existing urban area already available. So I suspect what we were describing there was the lack of bus route potentially that's as convenient and as frequent as we have in other locations. And we would be looking at a number of years before we could see delivery on those sites. So actually, in some ways, the new settlement would be in some ways quite similar to what we've done before, which is to put all our eggs into a small number of baskets. So with the last time round, the core strategy, we identified three urban extensions, and all of our growth was being directed to those three. And that's what's led us to be in the situation that we are now in 5 years' time, because those sites haven't come forward as quickly as we'd planned for them to. So actually, this strategy is looking to do the opposite, to look at a range of sites in a range of locations of a range of sizes to try and create that variety and to help maintain a 5-year supply through the planning period, to sort of add to the three big baskets that we'd already got and create that variety and hopefully create a deliverable strategy that will keep us moving through the plan period in terms of housing delivery.
Thank you, Chair. Just one or two questions. Thank you, Chair, for your very explicit and very down-to-earth, me anyhow. I don't know about anybody else's explanations. The one thing I would like to ask is, I agree with what Councillor Gorton and Councillor Hart and Councillor Hamilton has actually put in front of you on that aspect. The only aspect I would actually like to ask is neighbourhood plans. If they're going to be taken into, they are going to be taken into consideration, from what I understand, at home, because it has been indicated that if the neighbourhood plan has been actually in play for more than 2 years or three, it's out of date. That's the one. The other thing is, and you'll know what I'm coming to, flooding. Because in the service areas, in a variety, in the varied service centres, we do have a certain amount of flooding and road closures. And because of that, we become what I refer to as a rat run. So it's just, these are the things I think when you go out to the parish councils, you're going to be asked. And to me, you know, the fact is just, you know, look at all, I would like me to have my ducks in a row and you to have your ducks in a row as well. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Fulton.
Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, Councillor Fulton. I didn't actually hear a question there. Did you pick a question out? Yeah, so you can answer that.
So is it
the question about neighbourhood plans, I think, relates really to the 5 year supply environment, and so it's probably to some degree beyond the local planning discussion, but actually it's a really important point around the relationship between neighbourhood plans and local plan, because the two are part of the development plan, and you know, we've got a more local approach and borough-wide approach. And it's fair to say that the local plan process does mean that all of our neighbourhood plans will need to take stock and they'll need to decide whether their neighbourhood plans need updating to reflect the new local plan. But the new local plan is some way off being adopted at this stage, so that's a sort of question really for them in the slightly longer term. And for the time being, planning applications are still made against the core strategy and their neighbourhood plans are prepared in the light of the core strategy. So they're not immediately out of date by this consultation. They're something we're going to have to work with all our neighbourhood plans to make sure they've taken consideration as to whether they need to do an update. On the flood risk issue, I think flood risk and in particular the resilience of our transport system in periods of flood has been a hot topic in preparing the plan. And this is where what Richard said earlier is really important, because that's an existing issue, that's an existing problem we have as a borough. And so development can't fix it, but we do need to be aware of it when we're planning development. So, I think to say that flood risk has been one of the key factors, it's one of those factors that's very difficult to overcome, actually. So we've worked really hard to direct developments away from areas of flood risk and to only look at those that do have flood risk where we've needed to for other reasons, and quite often that's been around regeneration of town centre, for instance, because we don't have an awful lot of sites within the town centre that don't have flood risk. And so you've got to then balance those two issues and think about whether or not we can find a way forward. But flooding on the roads is a different issue, and that's something we need to work with the County Council on as borough and County Council, rather than through the local plan process.
Thank you. Oh, that's all right then.
When you said, am I right? Claire said yes. You sort of asked the question and
answered my own question. You did. I'll do that kind of thing.
Very good.
Thank you, Claire. Sorry about that. Thank you, Claire.
Councillor Hamilton.
Do you have any
Councillor
Bolton has been put it off. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, hang on.
I've got a couple of specific questions, and before we finish this evening I wanted to talk a little bit about the consultation process, but I'll leave that for the moment. Something that residents are talking about a lot to myself and also Councillor Parton, because we look after a similar area, is areas of separation. And I think in particular, if you look at my ward, it's seems to be ever expanding towards corn, and I don't want to get specific really, but I think there is a lot of concern about areas of separation and how we're going to maintain those areas of separation, not just a line of trees, but something that actually is meaningful, that allows the village, the town, to retain its own identity. So that's my first question. And my second question is, to what extent could we be more bullish with developers about climate change and about green credentials? You know, it seems to me we've built so many houses recently across Charnwood, and I'd love to know why none of them seem to have solar panels or electric charging points or all sorts of things that I would have thought in the, you know, 21 years into the 21st century that I would have thought were absolutely essential if we're to hit our targets of carbon emissions, etc., etc. So I'm not a planning expert, clearly, that's what you guys are, but can we not be more bullish with the developers about green space, about green credentials generally? So those are my two questions, please.
Thank you, Claire.
I must say, before I ask this question, that you're right about H9 being the appropriate voice reference. So we'll make sure that we correct that for the conversation, so thank you for that. So areas of separation we've got 16 of them identified through the plan. They're very important. It came through very strongly through the vision work that we did a number of years ago with members, that areas of local separation were really important to communities. And I think they represent sort of a very local reaction to the types of development we've got with river corridors, with development either side of the rivers, and not being able to go, you know, east and west again, north and south. And we do see that sort of pattern of development where different villages are getting close to one another. And I think landscape, along with deliverability, were two of the key things that really drove the original strategy that we came up with and what we put out for consultation in 2019. And our first port calling identifying sites was to avoid all areas of separation, so to not look for any new sites in those areas, and the same for green wedges around the city. But what we found was we didn't have sufficient sites when we looked across the full range of criteria that we could mitigate the impact. So we did have to look in some instances at sites within areas of separation. We've done that very carefully with lots of advice from our senior landscape officer, and we've developed policies for those that are in areas of focus separation. It'll be very clear in the policy wording for those allocations that is the case, and that the scale of development that we've proposed within that site has therefore been reduced to reflect that in some cases. So it might be, for instance, we've got a site where we could have put 200 homes in terms of the scale of the site, but we've only allocated 100 because we've looked to be very clear in the policy that we're looking to maintain that separation, and that's what we think we can do without compromising the separation. We also set out quite strong, quite prescriptive descriptions of how we want the developments to come forward in terms of how they interact with the landscape. So it's not been done lightly where it has been done, and those things have been very prominent in our minds when developing the policy set. In terms of climate change and being more bullish with the development industry, through the core strategy process we learned that really pushing the boundary on sustainable construction, which is something we're all very passionate about, didn't get us very far when it came to the viability work. So very quickly that came out as being something that you're not going to achieve everything you want to achieve, and the thing that's really pushing you over is the policy requirements on sustainable construction. So this time around in preparing the plan, we have that in our minds. We've looked for opportunities to focus on things like the layout of developments to make sure that if in the future you want to put solar panels on, the development has been laid out well so that will work on those properties.
To think about green spaces and the relationship between homes and green spaces has been an important factor, and some of that has led to changes in the design policy in particular, where we've looked to try and achieve some of the things we want to achieve on sustainable construction through the design reason justification, and then in the sustainable construction policy we've pushed the boundaries as much as we think we can without creating viability issues. That's been mainly around things like water efficiency and heat efficiency of buildings, but we are starting to venture into the building control world, and the building regulations are set by the government, and I think really the best way to deal with these issues is a national change in policy, and that has been discussed at a national level, and there is consultation been going on around it, so our hope is that will get picked up through the building regulations process rather than the planning process.
Thank you. I wondered whether there was when you move into some houses, you can choose the colour of your kitchen and the style of your kitchen. The price goes up a little bit. And is that an option that developers are giving people to say, well, do you want solar panels put on? Because that is the easiest time to fit solar panels. And it's the easiest time to put the electricity cables in ready for charging points for the car in the garage or wherever. So apart from probably we can't be bullish because we haven't got national guidelines for that or any national policies to enforce that, but is it something we can encourage developers to offer?
So you've highlighted something which I should have mentioned actually, which is that we have included a policy on electric charging points. So every residential property, including flats, that have got dedicated car parking space will be required to be either have a cable or a charging point provided. And where we've got car parking being provided for 10 or more spaces, there'll be a requirement for one in every five to have a charging point. So that is something we felt we can do, and it's not a massive cost on development, so we have pushed that through the plan. But in terms of what's offered to people in the sales room, that's really going to come from the market asking for it. So if people start asking, the developers will have to think about if that's something they need to be starting to offer. It's not something we can require of them through the planning process.
I noticed Richard has his hand on the button, so I'll bring you in at this time, Richard.
Thank you, Chair, through you. Also, I think the trick is perhaps less about what measures could be placed on a building rather than to make buildings more thermally efficient in the first place, so they don't need heating, they don't need energy to reduce that uptake in the first instance. But I think we're a bit away from those being viable in their own right. And that would be a premium on the price of homes, which, as the price of homes is shooting up very significantly at the moment. But, Claire said, if there's demand, it'll happen. Because obviously the house builders are in the business of building houses and they want to sell them.
Because to retrofit would be a lot more expensive. So. Right, thank you for that. Councillor Parton.
Right.
Parton?
It's the way you said right.
I said he had his finger on the button or did he have his hand on the trigger? No, but I've got some more points. I'm looking at highways and virtually everywhere where in this mode cover you have S106 developer contributions, local authority highway funding.
Could you give us the page, please, Ted?
Oh, well, for example, that page 998 onwards. You can look at any of the pages. Take, for example, all right, let's just pick an example then. Let's pick Silo on page 1001, bottom. And SY6, Fort Wayne route improvements to the station from a key development site. £300,000, essential, SY6 developer contributions, / local authority highway. how we're funded. The local authority, where there have been developments, and again, to cite somewhere like the South Loughborough, where there have been successive developments, well, surely it's the developers that should be putting in, paying for the infrastructure due to the increased traffic. Because you know the local authority highway does not have a lot of funding. So that's the first question. Can you expand on what we mean by that, please? This is something we have discussed at the county.
Yes, Claire.
Really this is around how infrastructure is delivered, and often what will happen is, particularly where there are cumulative impacts, there's a number of developments having to contribute to a single piece of infrastructure. The Highways Authority will have a role in terms of front funding that and then collecting section 106s to pay for it over time. So it might not be that all the development money is available up front, because they may come through incrementally over a number of years. The example that we had most recently is at Shep Shed, where we had a number of developments going on. So the County Council have that role in working with us to understand the cumulative impact of all of the development that was going to come, identify the mitigation package that was needed, and then collect the money as each development comes forward. So you're correct that if the requirement comes from the development, then it's the developers that will eventually pay for that mitigation.
Are there parts of these where we are expected of the County Council to pay for it, or is this solely 106?
So the all of those things that are listed in the sort of pink colour have been identified through the transport assessment work. So what we've done is we've worked with the County Council, City and Highways England to transport model the impact of the development and the mitigation that's required. So in all of the cases of the ones that are identified in the infrastructure schedule, the plan is that they will be paid for through Section 106.
And the second point is to return to Loughborough in terms of the town centre. To what extent does the town centre master plan tie into this? There is talk, especially in the foreword, about the mission statement for Chalmers, and it does talk about the town centre. But to what extent is this plan provide anything new, or is this separate, or is the town centre master plan attached to it as almost like a sister project?
Thank you.
So the Loughborough Town Centre master plan, and we've got a master plan for Shepshed as well, have both been important pieces of evidence base that have informed the work that we've been doing through this plan. So I think we're still looking to deliver on those master plans, and this document in effect supports that and provides the hooks for trying to achieve those projects through development. But I think it's also important to say that the policies have also been influenced by a more up-to-date understanding of some of the projects we want to achieve in Loughborough, in particular through the town deal. So there's been lots of activity over the last year where we've had lots of stakeholder engagement on the town deal, and so it's been really important that we didn't only look at the master plan but also look at what the town deal is looking at for Loughborough. So hopefully you will get a flavour that both documents have influenced the local plan, and the aim would be that where a development comes forward in the town that can contribute to the aims of either of those pieces of work, that would happen.
And to what extent can this plan include something that, well, there's two theoreticals. The
So we have to look at any application that's brought to us on its own merits, and so we have to respond to any application for new purpose-built student accommodation and use policies that we've got in plan to respond to that. We've been reasonably positive about purpose-built student accommodation in the plan because it provides a good alternative to housing and multiple occupation, which we've seen concentrations of, which have brought about issues in some parts of the town. So they do provide a positive alternative to those. I do know there's concerns about whether there is a need for more, and that's not something we make a judgment on. We just provide a policy framework to deal with anything that is brought to us in that particular field. So, I'll try not to use those words.
Councillor Parton, is there anything else to add?
Yes, there is. Because, really struggling with, with the centre of Loughborough, its community has been decimated by HMOs, and I'm not seeing an erosion of the HMO market, which leads me to have real concerns for the future of the town centre, which is why I'm wondering, certainly when it goes to consultation, something that I think you're going to receive a lot of comments about. So to preempt that, what could we do to sort of after this meeting to work towards some solutions, dialogue?
So I think things mentioned on housing and multiple occupation is that we have found through recent research that they're playing a slightly different role than we thought they were. I think we perhaps traditionally thought that they were mainly housing students, and actually when we also did some research we found that they were housing quite a number of different people in our community and perhaps have reflect sort of to some degree some choices that people make about having more flexible accommodation, and then those that are perhaps more vulnerable and haven't been able to get onto the housing ladder in another form, using housing multiple occupation as a way in to providing appropriate accommodation. So I think the relationship isn't as direct as perhaps we thought it might be with purpose-built student accommodation, but there certainly has been a move to that type of accommodation being preferred by students in some cases. And so it's just that relationship really, and we've got policies in place to try and ensure we don't get that over concentration of housing multiple occupation. We've got a reasonably positive policy for purpose-built student accommodation where it's well located, so in walking distance of the things that we think the students will be looking for. And really it's just allowing the market to do what it's going to do in response to the changes. So if the market does dry up on housing and multiple occupation, we will see those properties converting to other uses. But we have to let that play out. All we can do is try and create a framework for good decisions going forward.
Thank you for that answer, Claire. You didn't use market forces, but you did use the word market. There's several ways of looking at student accommodation. Probably the mistake is the name there, student accommodation, because we're assuming they're going to be students and not one bedroom apartments. Probably we need to change the name. I don't know. So, Councillor Hamilton.
Thank you, Chair. I have a couple of questions, but you've already answered one of them, so that's good. That's a bit of a robust application of the policy CC4. So the only points more, point of reflection or suggestion is in the consultation plan. Which is very full, and obviously you want maximum engagement and maximum response. And so a number of stakeholders you talk about, you'll send emails to staff consultation. Bodies. Would there be value in these people to send an email to 2 weeks before the end of consultation give yourself time to go through the approval process within your body. And if it's almost like a 2-week reminder at the end, so that most of the start there, the 2 weeks before the end, that might just be useful.
Thank you. Any other questions?
So we do do a sort of full database wide mail out. Now that requires us to do still, unfortunately, still quite a few people that prefer things to come through the post. We do have to do some posting. And then there's a it's a very large database, I think it's about 1,600 on it currently. And so we have to send the emails out in batches. So it's quite it's a ridiculously big job actually. On the face of it, it shouldn't be. But to get all of that out for the beginning of the consultation. Having said that, so I'm sort of slightly reluctant to say we'll do it again 2 weeks before the end of the consultation. But what we do have is a number of other avenues, which is one that we've got an email alert system, so anybody who wants to can be signed up to our email alerts, and we've got a really good following on that, and that provides an opportunity to do some more ad hoc communication, and doesn't we just send one email and the system sends it out to everybody, which is much more efficient. And we've used that already to let people know that the paper's in the public domain, and there's been lots of new evidence added to our website, so we will certainly use that to do reminders. We're also working really closely with the communications team on using our social media and our own email that goes out to households, which again has got you know, a huge database of people now, so we can use that again. And I know that they've already got plans to be doing sort of a number of reminders through the process to keep it in people's minds. So hopefully that will cover what you're describing.
Thank you.
Councillor Pocklin.
Thank you, Chair. I hope the last time I come in tonight, I've tried to be succinct as I possibly can be. And I have stayed on Sheffield till now, so I've done very well, I think. One thing I want to say, and actually applaud this section of things, so just, you know, take that on board. I'm very pleased to see that there is mention of the need for sports facilities. However, it does come with a caveat. In Sheffield, we are crying out for a leisure centre and a rugby pitch, and I'm sure we're not alone in this. The borough. But I note one thing, this is obviously a policy that we try to adhere to. How can we, much like Councillor Parton said earlier, and Councillor Bolton said about schools and doctor surgeries, how can we as a council ensure that developers fulfil their obligations to build sport provision for us? Because actually we take a burden off local parish councils or Sports England to find these facilities. If there is that emphasis to do the things they're asked to do and fulfil it, then I think we might have more of an offset support for these plans going forward if that stuff is included. Because I think things like that are actually long overdue, desired. You know, not everyone wants to come in the car to look for from Sheffield, I'm afraid to say. Some people would like to go out of their own house, stay in the town and go and play rugby, or go down to the gym on a Friday night with the family and have a beer afterwards, which I go obviously counterintuitive, but you know, you deserve a drink after you've worked out, sure. That's my question, thank you.
I think one of the things we felt the core strategy perhaps didn't do particularly well was deal with indoor sports facilities, and it's something that we've worked with our colleagues in leisure to improve the policy framework, and that's reflected in the plan that is going to cabinet. It goes back to the same issue that we can only collect money that's related to the development. Now, the yields that sort of, you know, the standards that are set out nationally and that we, you know, we use locally are much higher. So you need a much greater critical mass actually to create the critical mass for a leisure centre, for instance, than you perhaps would for a school, because not everybody in every household wants a school. But the yields are much higher in terms of what you would need to collect the sufficient money to actually create a leisure centre. Having said that, I'm hoping this policy will provide that opportunity to start collecting money in communities. And then I know that our leisure colleagues work with parish councils and town councils to understand what's needed in your areas. And so we'll be making sure that money that comes from development is then spent in the right locations. For those communities. So hopefully that provides a bit of reassurance that we're improving on.
Thank you. And I think I'll let Jill Bolton have the next question.
Thank you, Chair. I said earlier that I wanted to come back and perhaps talk a little bit about the consultation process. The first thing I'll say, and this is not in any way a criticism, but I do have a concern that the consultation is taking place for 6 weeks over the summer. And there are a number of reasons for that concern, because people's minds are not focused on something like the local plan, and particularly in my ward, the two residents' associations do not meet in July and August. That's just tradition, they don't meet in that period of time. So I just wanted to express that concern. My second thing on communication is there's a lot of really good stuff, as Councillor Hamilton said, in the consultation plan, but again in my ward at least 13% of my residents do not use computers, do not have access to email, do not have access to social media, and I believe that this is something that every single resident in Charnwood needs to have the opportunity to contribute to. So I just wondered whether there was a possibility of doing a flyer through letterboxes. It's something that I would probably try to do in my ward. I mean, of course, the big issue then is you do a flyer, they don't have a computer, and of course, Sammy or whoever is going to end up printing off lots of packs which people may not need when they see the size of them. So I don't have an answer. I think it's a little bit of a conundrum as to how we get involvement from everybody. My next point is, what will the structure of the consultation be? Will we be asked, because I will be replying as a resident but also as a councillor, will we get a series of questions to answer? Because I think that would be really helpful. And my final point, and then I will be quiet, Chair, my final point is, if there are significant issues raised throughout the public consultation, is there any intention that a revised draft of the plan could come back to council, or does it all go straight off, as I think I read somewhere in the paperwork, it seems to that we will collate the residents' comments and they will then be sent off to the planning inspectorate? Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry, there's a bit of a mishmash of points there.
Thank you for that. And well done for bringing that to the consultation.
Okay, so there's three questions there. I think the first one around flyers and you know whether to put things to I think it's a small question, actually I've forgotten some of it, I'll come back to that. Whether to put flyers to the door, that's something we've had a similar, you know, discussion ourselves in preparing the statement of community involvement, which came to cabinet last year. And it's one of those things where that has some benefits, but it's also quite costly and time consuming and in the end the approach we've taken, which is something we've never done before, is to propose the statement of community involvement that we will put site notices next to all of the sites that are allocated for housing. So that way if you are a frequent walker past the site that is actually designated for housing or for employment or any other use, that you would see that site notice. It'd be similar, a bit more interesting than the normal planning documents that we do put up normally. It would be a bit more colourful and it would perhaps catch people's attention. It would have a map on it and it would have links to websites. Now, it's a good point that isn't helpful for anybody who wants to then go in. So I will have a look at the wording on flyers that we're thinking about putting up to sign it so we can make sure that we make reference to how you can get hold of the documents in person, which you can do. They will be available at the council. And obviously the other option is to use libraries for getting on online. So that's where we can point people to on those sign notices.
In terms of the consultation being over summer, that's something we've discussed. It's very difficult with consultation not to find ourselves within a period of downtime over the year, you know, whether it be Christmas or Easter or some holidays or a further period. It's really quite difficult sometimes to find the perfect location for a consultation, and I think the answer is there never is a good time to do it. We've got to balance the need to push on with the plan. We've had a little bit of delay through Transport Modelling recently, and I think we're really keen to get moving with the plan because it is our solution to a five-year supply. And so from that point of view, those are the things that we've balanced in coming to the decision around the proposed consultation. But obviously that's for approval from Cabinet and for Council. In terms of engaging with groups, we try to start that early. Like I was saying before, we've already done an email alert to let people know that things are in the public domain, so they can start to get ahead in terms of understanding what the documentation is about. We've already put some things on our website in terms of frequently asked questions to sort of give people a bit of a head start if they know they're going to struggle to have meetings over summer. In terms of the type of consultation it will be and how it will be structured, it's very different from the previous rounds of consultation on this local plan. Previously, we were very much putting out draft for conversation, for discussion, to have that input from everybody to how to make it the best plan we could. This time, we are putting it out as our best and final plan as a council. Mm-hmm. And so the consultation is very different. It will be to collect up objections or support for that plan. And so the consultation will come with a questionnaire. It's very it's a very formal stage of consultation, so we really want to support people in making their comments properly, because the inspector will be the one to receive the comments, and that inspector will be looking for some very critical things. So they'll be looking for whether or not there's a soundness issue that's been identified. So we'll set out what the soundness tests are so people can have a think about which soundness tests they think they'll be looking for evidence or justification for that position, and then they'll be asking really, well, what would you change to make it better? So what would be the alternative that would fix this issue that you've identified? So we'll create the questionnaire with those things in mind so that health respondents make good responses, so the inspector gets the information they need to hold a good examination, and obviously officers will be on hand if people are struggling with that side of things. So if we do find there are really significant issues raised in the consultation, I think I can probably already guess there will be, because this is, there's a lot in this document. It's 50 policies, 80 allocations for housing and employment. There are bound to be things that are very controversial and that do cause people some real concerns. But that's the purpose of the examination. It's not to rubber stamp our plan, it's to challenge us. So we will be examined, as officers will be asked to defend the plan, to justify the plan, and to accept where we've gone wrong. And the process of the examination allows you to make modifications. So if the inspector agrees with the evidence from people that think we've done something incorrectly, the inspector can offer us a modification that we can then bring back to council to say we're happy to modify the plan and finalise it in this way.
Thank you. There's nearly always one rebel in any group, and that's there. So, Councillor Pott.
Given that June 21st, or maybe 2 to 3 weeks afterwards, the government opens those restrictions, please would you be able to establish a display board in the town hall, similar to the one that Wood put up in John Storer House for the Bedford Square Gateway? Please.
That's certainly something we can look at, I think. We planned the consultation very much to be COVID safe, so that if we are in any sort of restrictions, we can still run the consultation as planned. But certainly the opportunity to do things in a different way because of the restriction lifting, we'll have that discussion with our communication colleagues and look at whether that's something we can do within our budget.
And what we found was that when we put the three-day events on at John Storer House, we were able to sort of neutralise a lot of the critical comments. And then once that had finished, we found that people were very, the criticism died away, really, because, you know, well, did you come to the exhibition? Did you see the amount of detail we laid it out for you? So I think it's very useful.
I think my own comment there, a good idea, but I certainly, welcome, high five. I certainly think using the community libraries, if you're putting up a planning notice, exciting, and at each site, I think one of those could also go into the local nearby library. And it could also go to the school. What dates? Yes, June. It could also go to the school. It could be that the local councillors then, to those particular areas, will be able to advertise and say, you know, go and have a look at the plan. It's available to look at. And then it might just whet their appetite enough to go online and look at the plan there. I'm not suggesting do a whole big display, but just to put a little bit of meat on the bones and encourage people to go online, because there is an awful lot of information to sort through, and probably if you localise it, I don't know how you will do it at those particular sites, but I'm sure you will localise it to each site, won't you? Right. Well, our job then is to look through the recommendations, which I am going to assume that you all have read. And I'm going to ask, even though I've got the script, is that what I do next?
Yes,
no idea what the script is. I'm going to ask you if you, thank you very much, will are able to support the recommendations as set out on page 7, the engineer's writing 6A. Councillor Bailey, though, would you like to add anything to the end of this, please? Whilst I catch up with whereabouts I am.
Thank you, Chair. I was trying to string it out a bit longer. Just a huge thank you to Claire and Richard for their technical expertise this evening. As you can fully appreciate, the amount of detail that has gone into this, you know, we're over 5 years in the making, and to this point, hopefully we're on the final steps towards the end goal, this being one tonight, and obviously Cabinet later on this week. But as you can fully appreciate, the amount of consultation, stakeholder input, other inputs from people like Environment Agency, County Council, etc., has been immense to even get it to this point. And you can see that by the sheer size of the document in front of you. Some great questions this evening. There's, you know, the fact that it has generated those questions is actually, I think, is a good sign that it's making people think. You know, this is a huge piece of work by the council that is hugely influential of a charm for the next 5 years, well, 16 years to be precise. So it should challenge, and it should, you know, hopefully make charm an even better place to live. So thank you.
Well, thank you for that, and I have to echo my thanks to Claire. I also thank Richard for balancing out how we're sitting at the moment. So well done. But when I met you this morning, Claire, and you straightforwardly sort of put it through to us, and it made me understand things a lot better. So thank you for that. Right, so I'm going to put it, I didn't need the script after all that, I've done it. So I'm going to ask you each in turn if you support the recommendations. Councillor Bolton.
It's difficult going first, but yes, I will support the recommendations.
Thank you. Councillor Brooks.
Yes, I support recommendations.
Councillor
recommendations.
Councillor Parton.
Yes.
Councillor Barclay.
I support the recommendations, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Ransom.
I support the recommendations, Chair.
Thank you very much, and I support the recommendations as well. Thank you very much, and goodbye. I won't be chairing the next.